It's a brand new best podcast in baseball. The Cardinals Cubs meet for the first time. So that means it's the first Cubs Cardinals weekend of the season. And of course, the best podcast in baseball is going to spend that time diving in deep to the nitty gritty of the collective bargaining agreement. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No. I got Patrick Mooney on to talk about the Cubs side. I'm here to talk about the Cardinals side. What they share in common? Well, they're both swept by the Brewers. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by Patrick Mooney, Cubs beat writer, senior writer at The Athletic. Really good to see you. I'm eager you to see. It's like almost Flag Day. It's like basically June, and the Cardinals have not faced the Cubs. Anything been going on with them recently?
It was funny when you reached out to have me on, which I appreciate. It just kind of got me thinking about Cubs Cardinals and how when Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer showed up in Chicago, the Cardinals were the standard and it was constantly referenced. Just their scouting and player development machine, their sustainability, and for the Brewers to come on the way they have is really kind of mind-boggling, to where I feel like in our day-to-day coverage, kind of thematically from season to season, the Brewers just take up a lot of mental bandwidth in Chicago right now. And I don't think that means the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry is over. It's just like that's how good and dominant the Brewers have been, and that's kind of what the Cubs and Cardinals – have in common right now of looking up at Milwaukee in the standings.
So both teams were swept by the Brewers here recently. That was part of the Cubs 10 game losing streak that took them from first in the National League Central to last, because that's how bunched up everybody is. The Cardinals were swept in Milwaukee. This is part of their, the six losses in eight games against the National League Central foes. This is their first really extended stretch against the division. When I was watching that series up there in Milwaukee at American Family Field, former Miller Park, I just was like, the Brewers are going to win the division because they have Jacob Mizorowski. No one else has a Jacob Mizorowski. He's just, I think of that game, that Monday game, Memorial Day, where he struck out 12 of the Cardinals, just absolutely was filthy and overpowering. That has to be a top five game I've ever seen pitched.
Wow.
And if you give me another week, I'll probably say it's top three. And if you give me another week after that, I honestly can't say that in the thousands of games that I've more than a couple thousand games that I've covered, have I seen a pitcher with better stuff than that? I've seen better pitched games.
Yeah.
I've seen like dynamic results and really strong pitch, but like 91 mile an hour curveball, 103 the first six pitches, and it's not straight. It's funky as all get out, and a cutter at 97, kind of a slider type thing. I've seen Cardinal pitchers have a fastball that was slower than Mizorowski's curveball, which is hard to compute. Like just it's hard to figure out. And I was watching going, that's why they're going to win the division. I mean, he's kind of emblematic of it, right? They just know how to develop pitching, and they're overwhelmed. They're dominant with it.
Yeah, I think you're right in that they have that frontline guy who can prevent the 10 game losing streak in May. And now the Cubs, granted, have had those guys at times. Like Shota Imanaga has pitched at that level before. He just happened to go through kind of a downturn here recently. He'll be pitching in St. Louis. Cade Horton was that guy for most of the second half of last season.
Very impressive.
He's recovering from elbow surgery. Justin Steele had that Cy Young caliber season. He's had a setback, and still there's no no timeline yet for his return. And, you know, Matthew Boyd was, he was like chasing an ERA title, you know, well yeah. into the second half of last season, and he's on the injured list. So, you know, maybe the Cubs get ready. They think Edward Cabrera could be that type of guy. We haven't Absolutely. Seen it yet, but I think you're right in that it's, you just can't like hope for the Brewers to falter. We don't know how they do it. It's clearly not all Craig Counsell. It's not all David Stern's magic behind the scenes, that they just keep doing it in a way that, I've said this before, really sort of embarrasses the Cubs in a lot of different ways. Just of, you know, you have a business side that I'm assuming is like, you know, we give you guys $100 million more in payroll, and you know, they're still lapping us. They're pitching, they're a pitching factory, and the Cubs
they are.
Have tried all sorts of different ways to try and get there. They're pretty good at the major league level pitching wise. Don't get me wrong, but they're not what the Brewers are internationally. They keep churning prospects up, and just their touch and feel around trades and knowing when to let guys walk or when to trade guys for younger players is staggering.
Yeah, I'm real interested to see if the Brewers get to a spot where they go, all right, this window that they've kept open, this hold that they've had on the division, that it's time to kind of give that a goose with a headliner. Mm-hmm. And if they make a play for Skubal in the same way that, you know, CeCe Sabathia kind of yeah. changed them when you go back and look at his brief time with the Brewers, you know, the sense that, look, they're never going to, well, we'll see how things go, but it's unlikely they ever get to make a play for a talent that big when money is what determines where that player goes. This, you know, but if they want to be opportunistic and say, we rarely get a chance at a frontline starter like this at this point in their career, unless we've, you know, developed them themselves, be really interesting if they made that play just to have 2.5 months, 3 months of Skubal, Mizorowski, and everything else that they can throw at. I mean, that would really upset the landscape of the National League in a way that I think would be kind of cool and opportunistic by the Brewers. And they're one of the teams, certainly think about San Diego being another team willing to do it, but that has the prospects to do it.
Yeah, I was looking at Keith Law's list on The Athletic, and I think the number one prospect is a Brewers shortstop.
Jesus May, the youngest kid in Double-A.
Yeah, and then they got another infielder around 24, 25, 26, something like that. I did not see any Cubs on that prospect list. Doesn't mean their farm system is barren, but it is a reality check. Yeah. Because it does feel like Cubs prospects in general are sort of overhyped. And you know, I am curious, I've used this line before, of like, are the Cubs and Brewers like really battling to see like who is going to come out of the Central, or is it like who's going to get swept by the Dodgers?
Right.
Because watching that series last October, you know, it's, I hate to sound like, you know, I'm giving out a participation trophy here, but like the Cubs and Brewers were like evenly matched up. Like they're like Kyle Tucker getting one big hit.
Yeah, no, totally fair.
Away from knocking them out. So that's still where I get how awesome the Brewers are, but it's still like, you know, where's the World Series trophy? And like, can they really take down the Dodgers? That's what, and maybe it is as simple as just going out and getting Skubal, or knowing them, like they may look at it totally differently. Like, I don't know, is it a hitter? Is it like, you know, souping up their bullpen? Like, I don't know. It seems like they have such a good base that they could, you know,
they could go in a lot of different directions. And I do think, like, when you build a reputation, like the Cardinals went through this a little bit, you know, 12, 15 years ago, where they were a pitching pipeline and they were cranking out both starters and relievers, and then relievers who later became starters. I mean, they were doing really well with it. And one of the things that positioned them to do, and it's actually something the Cardinals are trying to get back into a position to do, is you develop this reputation that then teams want to trade with you because of your superior pitching development. So like the Brewers are in a great spot. Like they have highly ranked prospects, but they also have this reputation that if you go get one of their pitchers, you're going to get somebody who's been in this, you know, machine that cranks out great changeups, that has, you know, a feel for velocity, that you're going to benefit from that. So that too adds into like, they could do both. You know, they have both the reputation and the talent on hand that would make teams really interested in what they have to offer. I think it's a fascinating thing. You know, I mean, the Brewers, you know, like you said, I mean, the Cardinals played well in that series. They did not hit well. A lot of that had to do with how strong the Brewers pitching is, just straight up, and how the Cardinals are kind of caught right now in a spot where they're not doing all that well with situational hitting, and that leads to 0 for 17 with runners in scoring position. Probably not going to beat the Brewers very often, going 0 for 17 with runners in scoring position. But the Brewers' defense stole games. They stole hits. The Brewers only had two runs in the final game and didn't have any hits until their final at-bat. You know, so, I mean, the Cardinals played well, so it was narrow, but the Brewers were on the right side of it. All of that leads into the fact that both of the Cardinals and the Cubs are kind of like scuffling as they face each other. Explain the Cubs' struggles. Two 10-game winning streaks at some point in time during the season. Longest home winning streak since 1935. And then a 10-game just absolute skid, just a face plant. What's behind it?
How much time you got? No, I think the short answer is like, if you sort of just woke up and had not paid attention at all to the baseball season, like where the Cubs are is like roughly where you would have expected them to be, like on pace for 88, 89, 90 wins, in a wild card position. Obviously you would have been curious, like, so the Brewers are doing it again. Mm-hmm. The 10 game winning streaks were just staggering in terms of like the amount of pitching injuries the Cubs have gone through. I know like the Brewers have a lot of pitching injuries too, and they keep winning, but those two 10 game winning streaks were just absurd in terms of like kind of guys stepping up, piecing the pitching plans together. Those clutch hits you're talking about, I want to say it was like 5 or 6 walk-off wins. Wow. That may have been part of their 15 game home winning streak. So, you know, I'm mixing up the streaks here, but just in terms of when the Cubs were rolling. And then it just felt like recently they were not getting that big hit. And then it's just sort of spirals like mentally of just like, it's still amazing to me after all these years, like seeing how, like, that's a real thing, you know, for professional athletes starting to press and like kind of hitting, being contagious in a lot of different ways. And I think the pitching injuries did catch up to them as well. I mean, Ben Brown and Colin Ray have been very good in the rotation, but like they were ideally supposed to be sort of long men, swing men, multi-inning relievers. Wow. You know, you're talking about, you know, spring training, Jed Hoyer talks about, you know, having like, you know, close to 10 major league caliber starting pitchers, and the Cubs they've been down to about number 10 at this point. I've sort of lost track. Like, I actually asked someone that on the Cubs a couple weeks ago of like, what is the depth now at Iowa? Yeah, and this person was just like, don't look, like, don't even bother checking. Yeah. Like they were running out of pitching in late April of just like, where do we turn? And so, another factor with this offense is just like, even when they were rolling, there were still guys who hadn't gotten hot. Like Pico Armstrong has sort of bounced back and he's doing some interesting things on the field in a lot of ways, but offensively,
that's a great scouting report.
Yeah,
you know, Pico Armstrong, he's just about 60, you know, power, 70 deep or 80 defense.
Yeah.
But 90 interesting. He's 90 interesting. Yeah.
Yes. Off the charts, unpredictable. I mean, Alex Bregman was the guy last year that they kind of pointed to of like, oh man, this guy would have been perfect for our team. Mm-hmm. He would have fit in so well. And there hasn't been a ton of there yet. Like he's been fine. He's a good defender, no doubt. His personality fits in with this group. You know, there are leadership components there, but I think Cubs fans are sort of tired of hearing about that. That they want to see him hitting for power, of just, you know, driving balls into the gap, being a game changer offensively. And he just hasn't really yet. Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson are sort of like extremely streaky hitters, and they've gone through different ends of that. And so, I mean, you have this weird sort of discourse of in April, we're talking about like, all right, who are they going to go get at the trade deadline? Like at that point, the Tigers hadn't, Skubal was healthy and the Tigers hadn't struggled to this extent, but it was like Skubal, Peralta, you know, sell the farm for Logan Webb. And like, now it's like, who's pitching Tuesday? And shouldn't Craig Counsell be on the hot seat? Just a really, like, as you know, the Cubs kind of do extremes, like covering this team is usually a roller coaster, but this has been unusually so.
I'm gonna walk out on the edge of the diving board,
okay, and
try to ask you if what the Cubs are going through like this year, is it all comparable to, and brace yourself, but I can explain it, to the 2023 Cardinals, which was an absolute disaster here. Losing season led to a lot of the changes that followed, sort of just a year where they're like, all right, this, where they started to go, do we go for one last gap and try to put it together? And maybe the Cubs then are more comparable to the 2024 team. But here's why I say that, is the Cardinals were existing sort of at the extremes, right? They had the veterans who stood out, like, you know, Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, who they were relying on to perform like veterans, but were entering the autumn of their production. And then they had on the other end young guys who were inconsistent and trying to figure out their games, like Jordan Walker and some other ones. You know, some guys did. Brendan Donovan would count as a young guy who then figured it, right, became more consistent. But they were relying on young guys at key spots, older veterans at key spots, and they had their starting pitching completely come undone. And it made them go, all right, well, we got to focus on something. And they did. Then they said, we got to, you know, go outside, spend $100 million on starters just to reclaim this. And then it just was like, well, that's just spinning the wheels. So now they've gone like, well, let's really lean into the youth. So at least you have like them growing together, and you aren't relying on these veterans. I there probably is a parallel there. Swanson and Bregman are the Goldschmidt and Arenado of the Cardinals. Pico Armstrong, while ahead defensively, you know, right now is the Jordan Walker of the Cubs. And it creates kind of this clash of players who have been good, players who will be good, and it creates a team that isn't good right now.
I would say it was part of the clash you're referring to was there, because I feel like I've sort of heard hints about this of like the Cardinals old guard and like the Cardinals young players did not sort of mesh, and it created this sort of stifling clubhouse environment, or is that overstated?
Yeah, that's probably overstated. I it's not inaccurate. Let me kind of describe it, because it's a great question. So you had these veterans who were struggling, right? Mm-hmm. And as a result, were kind of more inward. And then you had these young guys who were trying to learn, but weren't connecting with the older players because the veterans were struggling. Does that make sense? And so like a Nolan Arenado, when he's struggling, you know, he's not going to give advice to guys. And it helped. It did help to have like Lars Nootbaar on, because he kind of helped pierce that with Arenado. But they were both, Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, and then later some of the pitchers and stuff, they were just so searching for like, why am I not performing like I'm capable of, that it became like this notion of like, I got to figure this out for myself. And the young guys were arriving, and like, they're like, well, where do we go for direction? At some point in time, like, you know, there are multiple examples where like a young player did something, and there wasn't a veteran to go, hey, no, that's not how you handle that situation. That's not how you handle that moment on the field. You know, that right there could have won us the game. And instead the manager or coach had to do it. And that creates a whole different dynamic too, right? And so, you know, it did kind of create this clubhouse that had it had silos, but not because they were bunkering in and couldn't get along. It was because they were all like, where, like, none of this is familiar. And that's how they spoke about it. Like, the young players were like, we don't get it. This isn't the Cardinals that we were told about. And we're not playing like we're expected to. There's a whole lot of pressure here. We're just trying to figure it out. And then there were veterans who are like, this isn't the Cardinals we expected. We're not playing well. We don't understand it. There's just a whole lot of that. And, you know, actually, Ali Marmol brought this up in Milwaukee about what it was like being a young manager at that time and just trying to find answers. You know, he said every day he woke up, like, how do I make the organization better? How do I make the team better? And that was always kind of the goal. And he always kind of had an idea in mind on how to do that. And throughout that whole season, he's like, nothing. What do you do with this? Like, what answer can you give? You know, and part of that was, and he wouldn't say this, of course, but we know it to be true. Part of that was because the answer was like, get a better roster. And he had to cover for that because they were just lacking pitching. And that was part of why they didn't recognize the team they were. It was a really interesting time, and creates this kind of odd clubhouse dynamic when everybody's looking around and going, this is not my beautiful house. How did I get here?
Well, that is a great reference. I would say, like, Bregman and Swanson could very well be past their prime, and at some point those contracts look like huge albatrosses. The young talent the Cubs have may wind up not being that good. They may not have enough pitching. But in terms of the atmospherics, I would say, like, Jed Hoyer received a contract extension last summer. We don't know how long they would announce it. So, but that gives stability. Craig Counsell is extremely experienced, is just in a different stage of his career than his St. Louis counterpart. I will say that Bregman, Swanson, Nico are all guys that you might see still in full uniform long after a bad game. I think Peter Armstrong had a couple of errors. I guess it was last week. It's kind of blending together now. But on the recent homestand, it was following his interaction with a female White Sox fan. It really kind of an indefensible exchange, but...
Yeah, real quick, do you want to give like the vague details of it without cursing?
Yeah, so Pete was hearing it a lot on the South Side that weekend. He's kind of a lightning rod. He sort of brings it upon himself too. I think he would agree with that. He wants to be that sort of straw that stirs the drink. And so he tries to make a play, really kind of an impossible play, doesn't catch it, gets heckled. He has a very vulgar response to a female fan that I think he just sort of lost it in the moment. It wasn't just like that one fan, is my understanding. And like I said, indefensible what he said, but I think it's not really reflective of like how he interacts with, you know, his coworkers, people behind the scenes at Wrigley Field, how good he is to young fans, signing autographs, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so, like, it clearly, you know, bothered him. It became a distraction. Like, this is an all-world defender who has two errors against the Brewers in like this huge series in two different games. And so we go into the clubhouse. You see Bregman in full uniform sitting in a chair next to Crow Armstrong. Their lockers are near each other in the Wrigley clubhouse. You know, Dansby, you know, got paid in part because of his intangibles, because he had won in college at Atlanta. Nico Horner, Ian Happ, these are guys who, you know, I think this was something that the front office maybe overcorrected, or I can't get a straight answer on this, but gut feel, observationally, it seems like the Cubs saw what happened after they won a World Series, and that they felt, you know, things got a little loose, and that the players that they've kind of built around here, and maybe they're too much the same at times, but they're all very like serious, routine oriented, you know, even keel. And you kind of see it in the manager, whereas as Joe Maddon was obviously freewheeling and really let guys express themselves and was really the perfect guy, the right guy at the right time. You know, the Cubs are a little more vanilla now. And so that is one dynamic. I think the big thing of when you're looking at sort of inflection points of, you know, where is this team going, or comparing it to different itinerations in division, is they have a ton of free agents coming up after this year. That was part of why, you know, they did the Bregman deal, you know, looking at him versus hitters who'd be on the market after this season, why they extended Nico, why they extended Pico Armstrong. Like, you have to feel the team, you know, whenever the lockout ends and they reach a new agreement, like, you're going to have to put players on the field. And like, they were staring at just huge holes in their depth chart. So kind of, they had to make these decisions. You know, it was smart for them to be proactive. Maybe at the trade deadline, they think the same way too, looking at how many of their starting pitchers will hit the market after this season. If you can get a controllable guy, that's kind of like, you know, a unicorn for them. You know, we'll see if they actually do it. But I think the young talent component is interesting, because like, is Moises Ballesteros going to be one of the best hitters in the game? He almost has to be, because he doesn't quite have a position yet, even though I think he's going to be a catcher. What do you do with Matt Shaw, who had a really good second half last year as a rookie, is on the injured list now, is sort of marginalized as a super utility player? Is Pete Crow Armstrong a superstar, or is he like a number nine hitter who win Gold's Gloves? Like, that's still a guy who plays 10 to 15 years in the majors, but like, what's the impact going to be? You know, their corner outfield spots figure to be open next year. Kevin Alcantara, Pedro Ramirez is a nice looking prospect that they just brought up. So like, they have, so like, if a couple of those guys click, you have that kind of next wave coming up. But if they don't, you've got a problem.
Yeah. Well, so interesting, the timing of all that, right? Like, probably some of it by design, some of it by happenstance, where the contracts are expiring just as a new CBA is going to come in.
Yeah, not an accident. Yeah.
Right. Which allows them to either, you know, be in a real nimble position if there's a luxury tax / cap, soft cap, whatever, that hammers them. But also, if there's a floor that rises, they can kind of shoot that gap or be in a spot to position to take advantage when, you know, some of these teams have to adjust their payrolls. And you start seeing some of these weird trades like we see in the other professional sports as teams have to adjust. That's what I mean. Obviously, a lot of it's by design, but That also could be a complete disaster if not much changes, yeah. and you have a spot where there's not much available, then you're like kind of caught.
Yeah, the list is not good of upcoming free agents. I mean, like Ian Happ and Seiya Suzuki are probably gonna be two of the best hitters out there, and they're your own guys. I mean, that's what they were worried about with Nico Hoerner, that if some team saw him as a shortstop, or if a team like the Dodgers just said, you know, we want four prime years of this mm-hmm. guy at, you know, a ridiculous AAV. You know, they were aware of that. They're going to have to rebuild the pitching staff, even if everyone was healthy. Yeah. I mean, Tyone, Shota, Boyd, all set to become free agents. I'm probably missing someone else, but that's like, you know, 60% of an opening day rotation, plus Justin Steele being this question mark, and Cade Horton
and Cabrera
looking at like a 16 Montana. Exactly. Cabrera, who weirdly had been healthy until this blister, but had not really reached that next level that the Cubs mm-hmm. thought they could tap into when he came over from the Marlins.
He's an impressive talent. We saw him a lot in spring.
Yeah.
Him a lot in spring. The Cardinals and the Cubs arrive at this weekend's series pretty much separated by percentage points at this point. Mm-hmm. I believe the Cubs are technically in second place, just ahead of the Cardinals. They've won two in a row to stop their 10-game skid. Cardinals have lost four in a row, three of those to the Brewers. What was the perception, if there was a perception at all, from the Cubs of the Cardinals? You know, like you mentioned from the beginning, the Cardinals were of mind for the Cubs for so long. I remember talking to Joe Maddon. In fact, I had this conversation. You'd appreciate this. I had this conversation with Ollie Marmol recently to ask him if he saw it the same way for this current Cardinals team. Joe Maddon would talk about how he would say you have to face the Cardinals to know how big that gap is. You have to play with them to learn how your talent then covers that gap. He said, and then you have to beat them. You have to beat them and at their place to know that you've arrived as the superior. Like, you kind of outlined that for like a young team. And I remember there were times where the Cubs would play a good game and, you know, the Cardinals would just, beat them late or have like, Carlos Beltran or whatever, or somebody, or Matt Carpenter hit a home run or something. And Madden would be like, no, this is good. This is like, the loss isn't good, but the lesson is good, right? And he would describe that. I brought that up to Ollie Marmol recently, asking him like if this is the same kind of thing for his young team, that they need to know, they need to face better teams to understand how much better they have to get, which is essentially what Madden's message was. What was the perception of the Cardinals going into the season from the Cubs? Again, if there was one at all, were they not viewed as a factor?
Yeah, I feel like Madden's takeaway is kind of timeless, like in terms of
the nature
of competition. I do think it's shifted, though, like from that time till now, the schedule is different. Like it's, you're just not having the same interaction. And also, what the Dodgers have done since then, I feel like created this whole nother tier of like how good you have to be and how frustrating that is.
Great point. Yeah.
Like that's kind of my sort of, you know, gut reaction to that. I don't think the Cardinals, not that the Cubs look down on the Cardinals. I just think like the Dodgers are sort of who everyone's chasing. And then the Brewers, that rivalry had just been so in their face for the last couple of years. I think that is more of a focus. But also, to be honest, like Joe Maddon was so good at like deflecting attention and sort of being that ringmaster, enjoying the back and forth, the banter, the bickering, and that the Cubs now are, I want to say boring, but like they're just so like process oriented, and we're going to focus on our thing. Like, you know, Craig Counsell, you know, there are times if you ask him about a different team, he might just go pass, not interested.
So like,
interesting. Like, and he, I say as someone who I really appreciate dealing with Craig on a day-to-day basis because he is interesting off camera. While still on the record, he's better than he is for some of these televised things. Yeah, like he can be very detailed. He's a good storyteller.
Marmol's the same way.
Yeah, like
camera and it changes.
Yeah, he understands like what a beat writer's job is. So like if you ask him a Cardinals question, I think he would like go with it. And you obviously have known Craig for a while, but like some of the like local TV news camera, local TV news station questions about stuff like that, like Craig just doesn't really feed into that. And the Cubs have a lot of players who are sort of similar in that. Basically, everyone except for Pico Armstrong, like Pico Armstrong might kind of go there. But also, you know, I'm curious just to see how the two teams match up. I still think there's something to the Cubs going into Busch Stadium or the Cardinals going to Wrigley Field, where when you talk about those Beltran Holiday moments, like it just felt like so often of like the Cardinals ruining the story you had written, you know, on right when you're approaching sort of deadline. Like it felt like whether it's getaway day or some of those night games at Busch Stadium, just like constantly rewriting. Because it never felt like it was over until that last out was secured either way.
Do you think this is a big series for the Cubs? Do you think, coming at the tail end of this losing streak, that it is against the Cardinals, that it is at Busch Stadium, that they do have their best pitcher set to go Friday night? Do you think this sets up as a big series for them? Certainly, from the Cardinals' perspective, they need some traction. And I'll tell you why this might be a more significant series for the Cardinals than it appears at surface level. But I wanted to ask you about the Cubs first. Do you think? I mean, it could be a nothing series, but do you think it's an important series?
I would answer it this way: the Cubs would tell you something like, "We're just trying to go 1-0 today." Like that is like they are just sort of drama free in that regard, but. Let's not pay attention to their words. Like, what are their actions showing us? Within the last week, Craig Counsell benched Ian Happ for 2 days. He benched Dansby Swanson. He gave days off to Nico Horner and Seiya Suzuki. The Cubs called up two well-regarded prospects from AAA Iowa. And one was more injury-related, but still, like, Pedro Ramirez got – it went from – within, like, 2 days, it went from he's here to sort of, like, learn our game day – process, get some exposure to, he's starting at second base on Ryan Sandberg bobblehead giveaway day. Like, jeez. so like these are,
yeah.
Like there's clearly some urgency there. They're limited in terms of what they can do at this point in the calendar, but like they were feeling the weight of that losing streak, no doubt. So like they need to like, yeah, they split a series in Pittsburgh. They beat Skeens. Like, they need to.
Yeah, Cardinals have always done that. That's not that big deal.
Yes, and weirdly, the Cubs actually have done pretty well against Skeens.
He hasn't beat the Cardinals yet. Yeah, it's super weird.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but. Yeah.
Whatever.
So I don't think they would give you the satisfaction of we circled this one.
Yeah.
But like I said, this season very quickly went down the trap door from like World Series contenders legit to, you know, the crowds on social media being like, do something, fire everyone, like don't care what it is, just do something. And so that really, I think, creates more of the urgency around this weekend. The Cubs like have to play better, period, or else this season, you know, you see the National League, you see this division, like it's kind of bunched up. Like I don't think it's going to be easy. I think the third wild card team is going to have to win like a fair amount of games. Like I don't think there's going to be any sort of like, you know, side door into the playoffs. Like you have to earn that spot.
Yeah, that side door is the American League.
And yeah.
That, you know, a lot of the National League teams would be quite healthy and robust in the American League. But
yeah,
this is a significant series for the Cardinals for this reason. One, yes, they're coming off the sweep of the Brewers. It is also their first game home since the tarps off stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's also a Cubs-Cards weekend series that they knew might be the high point of their ticket sales, like just to be on, or one of the high points, right? So this is, again, beneath the surface, a rather significant series for the Cardinals for this reason. They're going to have big crowds there. The last time they played at home kind of ended with a couple of duds, right, against the Pirates. But it was also filled with euphoria during that homestand because of the tarps off and because of the walk-offs and because of all that. Just it brought a vibe back to Busch that had not existed there for, I think it's safe to say, years. And so this is a series against the arch rival, coming off a road trip that did not go well. Can the Cardinals and their fans kind of rekindle what they had in the previous homestand? And then the other part of that is, can the Cardinals play well enough in front of these large crowds to go to have some people go, man, yeah, I want to kind of go back and see that. Like if they're walked over by the Cubs, you can, I don't want to over dramatize it, but you can probably go like, oh, they sold less tickets for August as a result, but they play good. They play entertaining. They win some. That's going to have a bounce that they'll benefit from later this season. And it's going to create an atmosphere at the ballpark that we'll start seeing if it can sustain. We're going to see if like tarps off was a one-off or if it's, you know, got some, whether it's bare chested cheers or not, if some of that kind of energy at the ballpark has staying power, which I think is really tenuous. When you have it happen, lose two at the end of that homestand, then go off on a road trip that was just kind of meh. You know, it's like if the Cardinals play meh this weekend against the Cubs, that'll be the attitude. It'll be like, eh, then meh, whatever. And then at Busch Stadium will be back to being, eh, meh. And we'll see. I mean, but if they play raucous, if they play fun, if they win, it might be the slingshot that like kind of crystallizes what tarps off started. Like that's what they need. I guess that's a better verb is galvanizing. They need something to galvanize it so that it continues, not just was a flash in the pan. No pun intended with the flash in the pan.
Yeah, no, I think it's not the worst thing for a business to have to like really earn their customers.
It's not, it's great. It's great. Like,
Now there are certain cases where it goes to an extreme or sometimes it just gets into the cycle that's hard to break, but I do think the Cardinals are one of those interesting teams when you look at what's the new baseball world order going to be coming out of the CBA and obviously the changes they've made organizationally, like what's going to work, what's going to stick, and also just kind of an ongoing conversation we've had for years now of like the sort of existential dilemma regarding the Cardinal way of like does that lasting, like how, like do you lose something in the process here, or like how long can it be dormant before you can bring it back? Like that to me is kind of an interesting big picture thing about the Cardinals.
So I think it's safe to say that the way the Cardinals have played over the last few weeks, really, most of the season, including the Brewers series, is pretty much their best case scenario. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, you know, against the Brewers, they played well, but they're short. And that makes sense, right? They're a rebuilding team. And, you know, Oliver Marmol even said it. He had a line where I was talking to him about, like, just the nature of like trends swallowing a young team. Right. Mm-hmm. And he took it in a different direction because they've really been trying to address individual stuff and not have the team success or team trends or anything like that. That's probably a really smart way to go about it. Like, yeah. Hey, everybody, judge how the season is going by individual performance. And then occasionally, and we've seen it a lot, they'll be more than the sum of their parts. Against the Brewers, they struggled, but they played well. They just were found lacking, which is not a surprise. And Marmol's line was really good because he was like, they've built a roster. I'm talking about the Brewers. They built a roster that is strong in many ways and is ready to contend. And he then pointed to himself and said, we're building a roster to do that. Great. That's a great distinction. So I think when you look at how the Cardinals have played recently, you go, okay, yes, that's where they're at. That's what this year is. They play hard. They play crisp. They play clean. They get a no hit bid from Dustin May. They get a workmanlike strong outing by McGreevy to kind of get them, but they're lacking. They're just behind in the talent on the roster. All of that is prelude to ask you, which is the real Cubs then? If we've seen like the real Cardinals, and the real Cardinals are close to the Brewers but swept by the Brewers, let me rephrase that. The real Cardinals play close to the Brewers but are swept by the Brewers. What's the real Cubs? What are they? Are they the team that whips off 10 in a row? Are they the team that loses 10 in a row? Is their best yet to come? Or because of these injuries, is their worst yet to come? What are the real Cubs?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. I would say it depends if you're a glass half full, glass half empty type. Like, is there a scenario in which Matthew Boyd, Edward Cabrera, maybe Justin Steele, like they're healthy and fresh towards the end of the year and they go out and have a big trade deadline? Historically, Jed Hoyer, that's not really his MO. He'll do lots of things. He'll be decisive. I kind of doubt they'll trade for a Skubal, for example. I think despite all of the irregularities, that this is kind of the team we thought they'd be. A solid playoff contender, a team that can withstand a 10-game losing streak and still be in a playoff position. And I just thought, looking in the Central preseason, the Cubs had the longest runway, meaning their front office is not on the hot seat the way they were last year. Their manager, not on the hot seat the way that the Phillies and Mets and Red Sox had those like early fires they had to put out. That was just not going to really touch Craig Counsell. They had a lot of, so that you can sort of try to minimize some of those, the roller coaster nature of this. You have a ton of pitching depth, which is now severely compromised, but still has gotten you to this point where you're still viable. I'm actually not worried about the offense. I know it's been bad recently, but if you look at this group, it's almost entirely first round picks, international players who got seven-figure bonuses, players who were on various top 100 lists. Mm-hmm. Say Suzuki roughly was $100 million player. They have multiple guys on nine-figure deals. Now, maybe the Cubs misevaluated everyone, but the industry as a whole has been like high on these players. They have long track records. They have options where they can, maybe at some point, I don't know if it's Matt Shaw or Pedro Ramirez or Moises Baez, someone takes on just a more prominent role. Like, I think they have answers on the position player side. And like, their farm system, while not great, they have some pieces they can move at the deadline. So just all of that taken together, I felt like the Pirates had a lot to prove this year. I think the Cardinals' default setting was not buying at the trade deadline or really pushing in to try and make the playoffs this year.
Right. No, it's selling.
The Reds certainly have a Hall of Fame caliber manager and some interesting players. I just don't know if like sort of top to bottom, their organization is as solid as the Cubs. And then obviously, look, the Brewers are better than I thought they'd be. Like, I didn't think they'd fall off a cliff. I did not think they'd be dominating the division the way they have to this point thus far, but there's still a long way to go. And I think that's where I sort of land with the Cubs, is that they're going to be in playoff contention in September, and then we'll see if they choke or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So fascinating. I mean, I think the Cardinals being closer than expected is fascinating.
Yeah.
The Cubs, you know, they came into the season with numbers, but I'm not quite sure you could say they had depth in pitching. They had numbers, but it wasn't.
I mean,
there's a difference between having warm bodies and depth.
For sure. For sure.
And, you know, that's obviously caught up with them. You know, every so often you go like, man, the Brewers are going to fall back. And then they come out with some guy who, you know, just changes the look of that team. You know, Mizorowski last year, the Cardinals faced him in his debut, and he was dynamic with his stuff. But by the end of the year, he was in the bullpen, right? And now it's like, now he can pitch and at that velocity, and he looks stronger. I mean, he looks different, right?
Yep.
Looks like he can sustain it. And what a difference maker that is. It's just like, I kept watching that game going, this is like the Avengers with a Hulk. You know, this is what, this is how they're going to win the division, as I said. And so I think it's really interesting. You know, I think if either of us made a list right now as to how we expect the division to finish, I don't think we could get it right. And I'm not quite sure we could say that about any other division. I think you and I could both make a list of the other five divisions in baseball, and one of us would get, you know, most of them right.
Yeah.
Or I think combined, we'd get them all right with how they'd finish.
Yeah.
This one, I think you and I could both make lists and go, well, this team's going to win, this team's going to finish fifth, and we'd be wrong. It's just, it's going to be that kind of season.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if the Cardinals have staying power, if they make it interesting on their front office to the trade deadline.
Yes.
I think that would be
a great point.
You know, I'm someone who,
if the fans make it interesting too, like if they start showing up and the front office is like, well, these people bought tickets for August. These folks bought tickets for September. Are we really going to trade Dustin May and Riley O'Brien and Jojo Romero and go, hey, fans, welcome to 2028. You know, I mean, it's so weird.
Yeah, like, I mean, a white flag type of trade, particularly with how...
That would be like a breach of contract, right? Like, how would you look at that? If the fans buy tickets going based on, oh, man, this team's really performing in July. And in August, that roster is like, that's not what we signed up for. Is that a breach?
Yeah, I would be a terrible GM or bad special assistant, because I always feel like these seasons, like when you have those opportunities, you have to take them. I think there's value in a player like Jordan Walker playing a full, meaningful, highly productive season.
Totally agree with you.
I think certain lessons compound. You know, I think here in Chicago, the White Sox will be in a similar position. Mm-hmm. They're in obviously a worse division and an inferior league at this moment. But I really do think when you're trying to build a program, it doesn't guarantee anything, but I think it gives you some goodwill, some credibility to like put some wins on the board. And I go back to a couple of years ago. It's funny, they just showed it on Marquee, the Cubs network here, you know, Mike Tauchman making that unbelievable catch at Busch Stadium. And like that year, the Cubs didn't really expect to be buyers. And, you know, they wound up holding on to Cody Bellinger.
Right.
Which was fine. They wound up bringing him back. I mean, the problem was they salary dumped him after the first, whatever it was, the first year of that contract. I forget. Mm-hmm. It's kind of blending together now. But I think like giving your fans, you know, something to watch in September, like, is still the point.
Mm-hmm.
And, or not the ultimate goal, obviously, but still like worthwhile and admirable, not to just, you know, sell. Because I think sometimes we get, yes, Pete Crow Armstrong, that was a great trade. with the Mets, Robbie Baez. But if you look at the rest of it, like the next best return was, you know, Daniel Palencia for Andrew Chafin. And a lot of those, a lot of those trades were like Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
Does not get much from that.
That's a lesson for the Cardinals.
We'll see, you know, Kevin Alcantara. He's got a lot of talent, and maybe the Rizzo deal, or maybe he's used to get another major league player at this deadline. But like, you know, there's no guarantees. I think at least in Chicago, I think people were sort of spoiled by, you know, trading for Jake Arrieta and Kyle Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Addison Russell didn't stay here that long, but he was a huge part of that World Series team before his career ended under those circumstances. So like, I don't know, if I were in St. Louis, I would want to see them go for it, even if that still means, like, you know, you don't make it. Like, this is an entertainment business, and I think, you know, too many teams get wrapped up in sort of like, you know, air quotes, the process, you know, all capital letters.
Be real interested in if the Cardinals have their rebuild accelerated by a new CBA that says, hey, you need to spend some money. That'll be
that'll be
part of it too. They could at least read the room.
I
appreciate the way you also describe Craig Counsell, right? with his comments, because he's sarcastic. And sometimes it can come across as like a little bit, it's hard to know, like, did that come across as meaner than he meant it, or did he mean it mean? Right? Like, they're like, I think he might be mean. And then like, well, maybe it was meaner than he expected, just because the sarcastic comes across a little bit. But I did find it interesting through the years and talking to him that he would be more willing to talk about a team. It seemed like that he felt his club was trying to chase as opposed to if he felt his team was ahead. Like, that was like kind of a read. Like, if he felt like you would go up and ask him about the Cubs or Cardinals, whatever, when he was with the Brewers, and if he was like effusive and willing or like complimentary of that team, like it was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, they're higher in the standings or they have more talent or whatever. You go up and ask him and he kind of shuts it down a little bit. It's because he expects his team to be better than that. Yeah, maybe I have a bad read on that, but it did seem like that, you know, through the years as they were kind of challenging the Cardinals, he was more willing to talk about the Cardinals. You ask him about the Cardinals, especially since he's become the Cubs manager, and maybe that's the pivot point. It's just like, yeah, okay, no, they're a team that wears uniforms. I believe they have laundry. You know? What do you think about the Cardinals and their team? You know, they have an interesting roster. It's 26 players.
Yeah,
26 players, big. Except for on the days when it's 27, but we don't have any of those days. But the 26. So I think it's a real interesting team with 26 players.
Yeah, I mean he has a great sense of humor that's really really hard to capture. Like, I literally have gone around to multiple people of like, can you give an example of a sense of humor? And it's like almost impossible.
Yeah,
because for us it's usually like either off the record or it's sort of esoteric or a little too inside baseball, or like it's a whole interplay or exchange that, like, to sort of explain all that contextually takes too long. But I think you see that's why players respect him. Like, he just know, like, he spent basically his whole adult life in locker rooms, so he knows how to talk to lots of different people. He's extremely observant. So like, if he sees you coming over, you can see sometimes, like, or envision the wheels turning in his head of just like, okay, what's the angle here?
Mm-hmm.
How will this play with this audience at this particular moment? And he's direct in a way that he will just say what he thinks, or he'll just not engage. And I think sometimes that's where you know, executives or managers or coaches get in trouble when they sort of try to, like, take a question and sort of spin it in different directions rather just doing the counsel and be like, nope, not interested, pass. And then there are times where you're just surprised, where you can sort of ask him a very basic throwaway question, then he'll give you a great story or anecdote from the dugout that you were not fishing for, expecting, mm-hmm. or at all. So
it's cool. I wrote this down and I almost tweeted it out, but I'll share it with you here and now the listeners. But I think I'm gonna start like judging my age by how Brewers managers talk to me. Because 7-8 years ago, Craig Counsell was the manager of the Brewers, and I asked him a question about base running practice and how you didn't see teams do it in the same way during BP as they used to, like when he was playing and everything. And I just was asking him why. And he's like, that is an old man question. How old are you? That is such an old man question. And he kept like, circling back to it and referred to me as like old man. Like, do you have a modern question, old man? And
yeah, there you go.
And I was like, that's what I mean. I was like, this is bordering on mean. Like, I'm probably going to say something that I'll regret if this continues. But anyway, I did say something I probably regret. I was like, good, do you have an old man answer? We can both talk. So he was like, that's an old man question. Then this past week I'm talking to Murphy and I'm asking him a question and he goes, well, you're probably too young to remember the Raiders. I was like, too young to remember the radio?
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, the dials on it we had to twist and everything. He's like, that's before your time. I'm like, no. Like, what? But hey, man, thanks. So, you know, I'm going to start judging my age. I'm Dorian Graying as a baseball writer. I'm working backwards based on the Brewers manager. So I'm very excited by that.
When you're saying that, it reminds me of something sort of Quentin Berry, an old Brewers coach, a current Cubs coach, had said to me when I asked him, like, what's it like working for Craig? Can you give me an example of sense of humor? He was just like, you kind of have to go right back at Craig, that like he enjoys that back and forth and like he'll certainly laugh at himself. He has a self-deprecating streak. And I also feel like, you know, for people who watch the press conferences, like Craig multiple times has sort of circled back to me to like clarify something or explain something, or, you know, I don't want to get into like the exact details, but he thinks about what he says, and they're like, he doesn't sort of just like, he's not a Belichick just sort of brushing off the media and being like, who cares. That I actually think he recognizes that we are conduits towards the fans, and that he's well served. Now the fans deserve answers and explanations in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He can't tell you everything, you know, but he is someone who recognizes this is an entertainment business and that there are people who pay good money to watch these teams and come out to the
That's
ballpark.
Really,
and so like really that good. Is something that I, you know, can't really know unless you're around him, you know, on a daily basis, and that he does make an effort in that regard. And he's always available on the field. Like Joe Madden was amazing, but he was also pulled in so many different directions all the time, understandably. Mm-hmm. Whereas Craig just kind of, you know, paces around the field during BP, and, you know, he's filtering in and out of the clubhouse a lot. He always stops. Sometimes he'll just be like, no, I'm not engaging on that topic, and we'll keep walking. But he's just always kind of around. He's very present. And I think a long way of saying, I think players feel that and respect that, just kind of the door is always open with him.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities there with Ollie Marmol, just the way you describe available, willing to talk about it. He's willing to go into detail on strategy. He's willing to discuss. I mean, we saw that on this past road trip, as sour as it went, he was willing to discuss like some of the dilemmas and decisions he made during this extra inning game and the Reds that they ultimately lost. He was really interesting with why he went with three infielders on one side but no left fielder behind them in extra innings. And then of course we had the whole brouhaha over the you know, the Uribe
Right.
Abner Uribe with his gesture towards the Cardinals. And, you know, Marmol goes, yes, I pointed at my head. I pointed at my ribs. And the Brewers had a whole other interpretation of it that had to be discussed and explained. The Cardinals were frustrated with signs from the Brewers dugout. That's not a surprise. You know, we see this all the time. Teams get frustrated with each other and what they think they're doing and what they're doing overtly, what they think they're stealing, what they think they're reading, all this stuff. And Marmol was trying to explain that to the Brewers, like, hey man, like, be aware, like, do this better. And the Brewers like, we're not doing it at all. Stop pointing at your ribs as if you're going to hurt our guy. And so you had these two sides with different interpretations. But Marmol, to his credit, went in detail and said, this is my side of the story. I can think of many managers who would go, I'm not discussing this next question. I'm not discussing it. But, you know, they make themselves available, and that's good. It'd be interesting. Now, that said, that their similarities do create rivalries. And these managers do, I mean, I think, I don't know what, this would be my, I wanted to ask you this lastly, is there's a clear kind of rivalry between Marmol and other managers in this division, particularly like Council and Murphy. Does that exist between Murphy and Council, or like they're so close, but is that changing at all because now they're on opposite sides of this real kind of frustration between these teams?
Yeah, I think they communicate less frequently, but they're still in touch. I feel like the bonds that they have really can't be broken when you're talking about.
That's good. Yeah,
I mean, Craig being whatever, like a high school kid, you know, trying to get noticed by Notre Dame. And I think Pat Murphy feels a real appreciation for Council bringing him in and really giving him another act to his career. So there's sort of, I don't think there's animosity between Craig and Merv. I think they just sort of understand the parameters of their relationship had to change, you know, during this time. Here, I think it's more of a, I think there are other segments of the Brewers organization that, you know, isn't too fond of Craig at this point, or at least in the moment they weren't. I'm not really sure where that is now. I mean, Craig was so decisive on this that it was just sort of like he made his decision and did not look back at all. I don't think he has like an ounce of regret or second guessing. And, you know, he's still... He's still a member of that community, you know, like he obviously has a place in Chicago, but he does a lot of driving between, you know, Milwaukee and Chicago. And, you know, he is, you know, rooted in that community in a way that, like, you know, few people at that level of the game can appreciate. And so I think there's lots of, you know, Council does enjoy some of the back and forth, like, you know, and I think, you know, Brewers, you know, love sticking it to the Cubs, you know, the way that they did. And obviously the Cubs want to take down the Brewers and are, you know, a bit not sensitive, but they know how it looks when they take the manager away from the Brewers.
Yeah.
And the Brewers just keep winning. And that when they spend $100 million more on their opening day payroll and are still trailing them in the standings, like they are a team that right now exposes the Cubs in a way that like no other franchise really does. And it's the proximity, it's the rivalry, and the recent history. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? The Cardinals can empathize. That's really their bond. The Cardinals and Cubs, they can bond over the fact that the Brewers just beat them. Just are better.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. And we'll see. We'll see.
Yep. That's Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. Covers the Cubs there, has for a long time. It's great to talk to you about the Cubs and baseball in general. You can find his work at The Athletic. You can also find your podcast, right?
Yes, Northside Territory with my colleague Sadev Sharma on the Foul Territory Network. Thank you for the plug. Yeah,
yeah, all part of that AJ Przinsky empire.
Yes, so, exactly.
There you go. Yeah, you can find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find it as part of our constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com, where you'll find all sorts of coverage of the Cards Cubs series. We don't lack for content when when the Cardinals Cubs come. We just don't lack for baseball contact at stltoday.com or on the pages of the Post Dispatch, the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Looking forward to this weekend. I'm really looking forward to the crowds, Patrick. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Cardinals can capitalize on and then create and re-spark. I think it could be interesting. Cubs Cardinals never lacked. You were saying this is a no drama Cubs team. Cubs Cardinals never lack for drama. So the Cardinals are going to have to come up with some extra drama to cover for the Cubs' lack of drama. I think exactly. They got it in them. I think they can do it.
Yeah, I just booked my trip for July, so I will not be here this weekend, but I do enjoy working at Busch Stadium. I feel like there's always something interesting. Like there's just stuff happens. Like it's one of those series.
Always happens.
And particularly late July, I'm jumping ahead here, but late July, closing in the trade deadline, we'll see where these two teams are when it's super hot and people's fuses will be much shorter. So it'll be good.
Yeah, good point.
Good entertainment, you know?
Yeah. And it all set the stage too with 4th of July in Chicago. So it happens.
Oh, like, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You have the real close thing. So anyway, look forward to it. I will see you at Wrigley then, and I will see you at Busch. And we don't nearly see the Cubs as much as usual, but it always matters for something. Patrick, thank you so much for joining me for this long conversation. It's been great. It's been great. We've learned a lot about Craig and the Cubs.
Yes. Yes.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now it's the final days of our Everything's on Sale event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses. Our Memorial Day event ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.